47. The Actinio is my heart. The impact had been worse than Colette had imagined it would be. She had centred herself in the way her father had taught her and made peace with the fact that she might die in defence of a country made up of fewer than 100 people. But when the Actinio sliced into the wyvern, Colette was thrown so hard against her straps that one broke and she bashed her head on the levers. For a few moments all she saw were stars, and she fought to keep her thoughts from turning to black. When her vision returned, all the lights on the Actinio were flickering. A stream of water fell through the grate of the walkway above the bridge and hit her. The hull had been breached. She tried to stay calm. She wanted to undo her straps, but she knew she'd only fall backward with the ship at such a sharp angle. "I believe we have penetrated the hull," said Monturiel, who was bleeding from a blow to her cheek. "Crow's Nest, report! Report!" she shouted into the speaking tube.
"Modo!"
Colette yelled.
"Report!"
There was no sound from the crow's nest.
"Report, navigator,"
Monturiel commanded.
"Modo, report!"
"Colette, go check on the condition of Comrade Modo."
"I will,"
Colette said. She let go of her handholds and slid down the floor to the stairwell.
"Be quick,"
Monturiel added.
"The mace is about to detonate."
The Actinio had settled at a 65-degree angle. Colette grabbed the railing and pulled herself along the stairs until she was in the corridor leading to the crow's nest. She latched on to doorknobs to help her climb, pulling herself past the captain's quarters. It took a full minute, thanks to her feet sliding with every step on the wet floor. With each second, she expected to feel the blast. When she got to the door of the crow's nest, she peered through the porthole, fearing the room would be filled with water. It was lit by one dim, fitful light, enough to see Modo, his head bowed, in his straps. She spun the wheel that opened the door, and water washed across her shoes and down the hallway. Two of the observation ports were cracked. One was leaking water. The others wouldn't last much longer.
"Wake up,"
she said, when she'd crawled up to Modo. She grabbed his wrist. It was cold, but there was a pulse. He must have hit his head or something must have struck him. She saw several broken pipes on the floor, any of which could have taken his head clean off. Through the portholes she could see that the submarine was right up against the hull of the Wyvern. They would never extricate themselves. Not knowing what else to do, she slapped him.
"Wake up, Modo! Wake up, you English dog!"
Modo blinked and looked at her, stunned.
"Stop yelling,"
he slurred.
"What's happening?" "We pierced a hole in the ship. Get out of those straps. The mace is about to explode."
She helped him undo his clasps, then grabbed his arm to prevent him from tumbling down the hall.
"Quickly, quickly! Help with the door,"
she shouted. This seemed to rouse him finally, and they worked together to close it, fighting against the draining water. The door closed, and a heartbeat later the mace exploded, the sudden jolting shock knocking them backward. Colette skidded halfway down the hall before grabbing a handle. Modo was clinging to one several feet farther along. She stared up at the door into the crow's nest. The door had held.
"Let's go,"
she said. They slowly climbed down to the bridge.
"Ah, you are alive. Report,"
Monturiel said.
"We fully penetrated the hull," Modo said.
Colette added,
"We were lucky to get out of there before the mace exploded."
Monturiel nodded. Her eyes had an empty look.
"Good work. While you were gone, Serdar and I tried to extricate the Actinio."
Serdar was moving the wheel, grunting. "The engine no longer has enough power to loosen us. We are lodged in the ship."
"Well then, we will drag them down to the bottom with us,"
Monturiel said emphatically.
"I'd prefer not to go to the bottom,"
Colette huffed,
"if it's all the same to you."
There was a long silence.
"It's done,"
said Monturiel finally.
"The Actinio has struck the last blow for Icaria. I shall go down with my ship."
She paused.
"Serdar, return to New Barcelona with our companions. You are released from your duties."
Serdar set his jaw.
"No."
Monturiel's eyes widened.
"No?"
"My duty demands I stay by your side."
"But what of Icaria?"
New Barcelona cannot survive without the Ictinio to resupply the city. Those who remain will have to return to the old world, to dream of another Icaria, another day.
Very well.
Montoriel held out her hand, and Serdar took it, moving closer to her. Colette was surprised to find tears in her eyes. Such love and loyalty between the two of them. They were insane, but admirable. Montoriel saluted.
Comrade Murdo and Comrade Brunette, you are officially relieved of your duties. There are four pods in the engine room designed for escape. You have my permission to pilot one. Serdar, give them the key to the engine room.
He reached into his pocket and produced a silver-colored key, which he handed to Murdo.
I appreciate your contributions, Serdar said softly.
You have both been extremely brave.
It was an honor serving on the Ictinio,
Colette replied, surprised by her own sincerity.
But, Captain, Murdo exclaimed, you don't have to sacrifice yourself. The Ictinio's secrets will be safe at the bottom of the ocean.
You do not understand, Montoriel said. The Ictinio is my heart. Without it, I am a ghost. Icaria is dead. I cannot live in a world without my ship or my country. So I will join my father. It is not the right time for me. For Serdar.
A voice caught in her throat.
The obscurity of the deep. My father used to speak about it all the time. Now it awaits us. Farewell.
She turned her back to them and began flicking switches and dials.
Go! Now! Both of you!
Colette pulled Murdo to the stairs. They made their way aft, slipping and sliding down the hall.
They are quite mad, Colette whispered. Incurably, idealistically mad.
Yes,
Murdo agreed, then looked her in the eye.
Or perhaps they're the sanest of us all.
They crawled past rows of cabins, the Ictinio trembling like a live thing. There was hammering on the hull and a creaking like metal bones bending and breaking. They pulled up short when they reached the end of the hall. The door to the engine room was now at the bottom of a deep pool of water.